So I want to take a picture of all the terrible sinners here. There we go. And now I'm going to take a picture of the wonderful saints. I think I left somebody out over here. But figure out which group you're not in. This isn't, I mentioned at the announcements, this isn't the traditional All Saints Sunday gospel lesson. The traditional one is the Beatitudes. We'll get to that. But this is the one that's assigned for the 22nd Sunday after Pentecost. If this weren't a festival Sunday, this is the assigned reading. And I read it because it is one of my all-time favorite Bible stories. Because I am convinced that Jesus was funny and a little snarky. The Sadducees were a sort of denomination within Judaism. They supported the temple, the sacrificial system. They're the ones who were really upset when Jesus drove out the people who were selling sacrificial animals and the money changers. They supported the temple. They also, clearly, did not believe in the resurrection. They did not believe in angels or spirits. They didn't believe there was any punishment or reward after death. That was their theology. This is where I'd like to encourage you to reread the stories of Jesus with this perspective, that Jesus was funny and a little bit snarky. And the reason I want is more modern than ancient in some ways. I'd like you to remember, what did these comedians have in common? Sid Caesar, Louis Black, Woody Allen, Victor Borge, Mel Brooks, Adam Sandler, Billy Crystal, Jerry Seinfeld, the list goes on and on, Groucho Marx, Jon Stewart. What they have in common? All Jewish. Jesus comes from a long line of people who experience life and see the humor in suffering. If this were a jazz service, we'd be playing When the Saints Go Marching In today, because jazz and the blues, well, you don't sing unless you have hope. You don't tell jokes unless you have hope. So I'd like to encourage you to reread Jesus' stories, understanding that he was perfectly capable of being snarky. And I can't imagine the stories that went around when, at the wedding in Cana of Galilee, he made 180 gallons of wine, enough to last for a month. What were the stories that came after that? So let me put it this way. Some enemies of Jesus try to make him look foolish, and the Pharisees, who were pretty much, Jesus was a Pharisee, if you will, his understanding, resurrection, angels, spirits, etc. So his enemies are trying to make a fool of him by asking this hypothetical, outrageous hypothetical question. I hereby give you permission to Google levirate marriage. Leviticus prescribes that if a man dies, his wife's childless, his family, his brothers are required to take care of her and raise children for him. It was a very progressive idea 3,000 years ago to take care of a woman who would otherwise be destitute after her husband died, in any event. So let me give you the short version of this. The Sadducees come to Jesus and say, this woman was married to five husbands. In the resurrection, whose wife will she be? And Jesus replies with, in the resurrection you don't believe in? We're going to be like angels that you don't believe in. So how about if you stop wasting all our time and talk about what God's really interested in, the living, and not argue about the dead? Frankly, a little snarky. So, you ever listen to not a sermon, just a thought? It seems that there is a whole branch of Christianity that is really concerned that you don't go to hell when you die. Jesus seems far more concerned about how you live this life that you have an abundant life in this life and less concerned about what happens to you after death. Because that's God's problem, if you will. God will take care of what happens to us. I trust that with all my heart. So, St. Paul talked about freedom a lot. It's not so much that we are freed from worrying about what's going to happen to us, what's going to happen to us in the next life, so much as freed so that we are free to live abundantly in this one. We are free from worrying about ourselves so that we can worry about others, that we can give life to others. Enough about that, one of my favorite Bible stories. The traditional All Saints reading, the abridged version. Then he looked up at his disciples and said, "Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now, for you will be filled. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. But I say to you who listen, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. If anyone strikes you on the cheek, offer the other also." That's what saints are like. Again, the ancients knew that the gods were blessed and that the dead were blessed because they didn't have to worry about anything. They were in control. Jesus turns that upside down and says that those who are blessed are the ones who have a full life, including joy and sorrow. Not this sort of half life that includes nothing but parties. Jesus says, "I came that you might have life and have it abundantly," which means all of it, where love is exhilarating and exhausting, where it's exquisite and sometimes excruciating. I hope you have a partner or a friend where love between you is so deep and so relaxed that it can be exhilarating as well as exhausting, that exquisite makes sense to you. I also hope you love people in such a way that when they hurt, you also hurt. Because I think that's what abundant life is. And that when that moment comes when they need you, and you'd rather be anyplace else in the world, you know that you couldn't be anyplace else in the world. That's the kind of abundant, loving life that Jesus offers. It's why I follow Jesus and why this is one of my also favorite passages from the Bible. Because this world's leaders always promise their followers that I will destroy your enemies and you will have an easier life. We've tried that for thousands and thousands of years. How's that working for us? Destroying our enemies. Jesus offers a twist on that. You want to destroy your enemies? Try turning them into friends. Love your enemies. Bless, be kind to those who persecute you. Try turning those who disagree with you into allies. So, want to know what a saint looks like? Look in a mirror. Or look at the people who will vote differently from the way you do on Tuesday. Saints are people who are flawed and self-centered, but also pulled by the Spirit of God toward the kingdom, pulled by the love of Christ to make friends out of enemies, pulled toward a life that will resemble what it will be like when the kingdom comes in its fullness, when all God's children will love each other. That's where we're headed. And now we get the practice for when it is all in its fullness. Thanks be to God.